Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everyone, Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
What is up, all of you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between? You have joined us for a new live edition of And the Podcast Will Rock. Welcome back to all of our audience. If you ever tuned into a live show, you know what's in store, or do you? Chances are, yes, but what's in store is a night full of fun, great company, and great music. I am your co-host, Mark Kammeyer. With me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, how you feeling tonight? You ready to get this thing going?
I am feeling great. We've been prepping for this live show all week. We did the big 100th extravaganza on Wednesday.
You did.
Got that all edited up and uploaded today, so that's available wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm working on the YouTube version. That should be up on the weekend, but figured why not? We need a little more Van Halen in our week. Let's just do an entire live show with like half of our patrons and a few special guests as well. So I've been looking forward to this one all week. How about you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just anytime we do a live show, it's always something to look forward to because we are not alone when we do the live shows. We always have a fantastic panel of awesome guests, usually mainstays within the show, honorary panelists. And that's what I consider every one of these people that are on the show with us tonight. So please welcome all of our panelists. We got Eric Sinich over here, Scott Everett, Ben Andreozzi. Welcome, Ben. David Lee Smith, welcome back. Chaz Mataz, Brad Gould, and Heath McCoy. Hashtag whatever happened to Heath Murphy. Welcome all, one and all. How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Hey, happy 100th.
Hey, guys.
Yes.
Congratulations, boys. Yes, congratulations.
We got room for one more, Christy. We got room for
that
one more,
true.
Christy.
Yeah, wants to hop on. We might get another guest along the way. Who knows?
Hey, always room for one more.
Yeah.
And where is Kevin?
The host. Kevin is out new for host. Dinner with friends tonight. He figured we weren't important enough. He went and made dinner plans with other people. So.
Well, everyone, hoist one for Kevin. What a job, right? That 100th anniversary show.
Yeah, guys, very kudos. Cool of him too, man. Yes. Really thoughtful. He reached out to me. Well, I'm sure you guys, and he wanted us to all put in, you know, word for the podcast. So,
and we really appreciate that. Yeah. A lot of great comments from all you guys. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
He's out for dinner, but he'll be up for breakfast because, you know, that's just how Kevin Brown rolls.
Bring the lunch bell.
Well played. Yeah.
Eric Sinich does put the cream in his coffee. He did tell me that.
What was the one?
He put that butter on his biscuit.
Wow. Corey, if they want
the after-hour show.
Well, that's
after a long night of being spanked.
Further explanation will require a higher tier on our Patreon, so stay tuned.
Corey, I
need a decoder ring. I'm going to need a decoder ring for this.
The last time I was here when Chris L was on, what was the thing that we were laughing our asses off at about something about, I don't know, jizz and disappear?
The come and go.
It was.
The come and go. The ejaculate and evacuate.
Yeah. Ejaculate.
Oh, my God.
And I said, ejaculate and evaporate is what I said. And Chris also,
hey, guess what?
Wasn't that a Star Trek episode?
And that is now a design on our merch store. If you go to T-Public, I'll see if I could bring
all
it
right.
up.
Because we could not do that.
New benchmarks. New benchmarks and content creation. Yes.
Well, everyone, you know why we're here. We've reached a new milestone, not just 100 episodes to our name, which is, I mean, that's amazing to me, but also another album in our journey we have completed, and therefore we have to talk about it. There you go. There's some of our the merch you can find at podcastrock.com.
That's great.
It's amazing.
Well, which song?
Which song was that for? I can't remember.
That was Unchained. That's why I ranked it number one. Yeah. Girls in Plentywood, Montana, back in the late 80s, would do anything for a six-pack of Canadian beer. And if you had a little Van Halen on the old tape deck, that didn't hurt your chances either. So,
plenty of hills and plenty of wood in Montana.
You know what? When I write the book, Ejaculate and Evacuate, I'll have to be on Eric's podcast to talk about it. So.
A memoir by Corey Morris.
That's right. The title of the podcast is Booked on Cock. You know, just for that. Only
thank
for
you.
That.
Thank you.
We'll get right back to Booked on Rock.
Nailed it.
After.
Nailed it.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this. Scott says he has a great screenshot of you reacting to that on our Discord, Eric.
It is truly, truly funny. That's part of the magic of the live shows. So yes. Thank you all for
anything
tuning
can
in.
Happen.
Yeah, anything can happen. And
miss this.
It's going to be women and children first. That's right. That's our second album completed in this journey. This is the one. This is the infamous kind of for a lot of people, last great. Or let me not say great. Let me just say last true album of like true blue Van Halen. And then you can say what you will about, you know, the Van Halen 3 or but like the last hurrah for a lot of people. But also this is the infamous album that is just disappeared from the stream waves, except for maybe YouTube. So you can find it on YouTube, but I could be wrong
This one is still around. It's a different kind of truth that they pulled kind of truth, everywhere.
Yeah. Bad. All right, well then forget about what I said. But what I do mean is this is one for the ages, absolutely. So I'm excited to talk about it. I'm excited to talk about this album with all of you guys. I assume without tipping your hands, you probably have you all have a lot to say about this particular album, or you know. You don't have to. Okay. Fair enough. But all right, Corey, what say? How do you think we should get this started?
You know, maybe let's just do a round table, just general impressions of Women and Children first. Because I tell you, coming into doing my own rankings, this was a very tough album for me because I'm like, every single song is solid. But I don't know if there's that one that really kind of elevates it. Like you can look at Fair Warning and whether you fall on the Mean Street side or the Unchained side, there's a couple of tracks that really kind of transcend that whole great album. Like it's very solid, but there's a few tracks that you kind of put over and above. And this one here, it's like, man, they're all pretty good. Like there's really not a stinker in the bunch, and it all kind of came down to personal preference. And doing the rankings, man, they were all over the place. We'll see when we get into it. Some tracks, some people on this panel put number one and other people on the panel put it number nine. Like they're nice. Big variance in all the tracks though, but we do have definitive winners 1 through 9. I can't wait to get into it. But yeah, let's maybe start with Eric because he talks the most, and maybe tell us your initial impressions of Women and Children first.
Oh, what an interesting album, because the first two albums are almost like mostly made up of the club days. And then you get a few songs, Jamie's Crying and Dancing the Night Away, that were written during the studio process. But this is where you hear the band start to stretch out. Eddie starts to stretch out, and he's still doing all these amazing things on the guitar, but he's really focusing on the songwriting more and experimenting with things. And you got some of like the heaviest of heavy songs from Van Halen, like Loss of Control, you know, Fools. But then you have Could This Be Magic, you know, and something bluesy like Take Your Whiskey Home, and then the songs that have the amazing harmonies in A Simple Rhyme, and The Cradle Will Rock and Everybody Wants Them are the two most well-known ones. But this is probably the most underrated Van Halen album, possibly. Ooh.
Hot take,
I would
maybe,
say,
maybe it's
because
take.
It's often overlooked. You know, a lot of people. I mean, Fair Warning is talked about so much. Obviously, Van Halen 1 with all the hits, 1984 with all the hits, Diver Down hits, right?
Diver Down.
And then you think of this one, and it's like you just forget just how badass of an album it is.
Oh yeah.
And Scott in the chat says, aside from Diver Down, which I was listening to Diver Down earlier today, and I agree with them, because like even songs like The Full Bug is like, man, this should be a lot more popular than it is.
It's going to be an interesting show when we finally complete Diver Down and we get another slew of panelists, probably not unlike what you're seeing right now. And because I know how people have talked about Diver Down, I know how people feel about the covers. I think Corey and I are probably the most positive on that album. So compared to the others, but we'll see what happens. I'm very excited to get into that. But before I do, we're going to talk about this one. So, yeah, moving along, Scott Everett, you're up.
This is probably going to be the hardest album for me to rank. And I think it's day to day. My rankings could flip just because there is no standout hits, like Corey said. So it's I love the album, but it's not one of my favorites among the top six. So I think I'm a little bit different. So it'll be interesting to see where my rankings stack up against everybody else.
Probably not too dissimilar, but as Corey said, the rankings were kind of all over the place. Even I don't know the full scale of everyone's ranking, so it's going to be interesting for sure. Ben, this is your first live show with us, I believe?
My first podcast, actually.
Oh, wow. Well, you broke the cherry.
It's about, the late, the teens or so, Panama, and I love this album, even from the cover art, which is just stunning. I mean, the pictures that are taken on this album, I remember getting it and being like, oh my God. And after the first two albums came out, they were just, groundbreaking. But these Women and Children and Fair Warning were just like unbelievable. They brought it to a whole different level. Women and Children, it's so solid front to back. It is tough to kind of rank this album, but it really was kind of tribal and really brought you to places. And Eddie was just, came out of all of them, all four of them really came together and gelled for Women and Fair Warning. It's a phenomenal album. My top, I go back and forth between Fair Warning and Women and Children. Love it. I love all of them.
Right on.
Well, there you go. Does someone like David Lee Smith share your sentiment? How you feel about it, Dave?
Does this answer your question?
Kind of.
Yeah, because this was I got this from that Walmart exclusive first six pack vinyl set.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was a Walmart exclusive.
Oh,
each
right
album
on.
Had a backstage pass replica. So that's my little show and tell. But
cool.
yeah, thanks. I was probably just going to echo what everybody else said, because this is, like Eric said, I think this one's pretty underrated in terms of the six pack. But honestly, like Corey said, this album was tough for me to rank too. Because the six pack is tough for me to rank as a whole, because like a lot of the stuff from the Dave era, especially, is just so stellar. And this album notwithstanding, but they did some different stuff and it just seemed so natural to them. And like I said, this was another stellar album for me and another album that's tough for me to rank as well. So, something had to give, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Feel like the heads might roll with the rankings on this one, depending on, judging on how everyone is already talking about it, there is going to be an argument, at least one, just one. That's my prediction. Hopefully a good and civil argument, but argument nonetheless. Speaking of arguments, Chaz, how you feeling about Women and Children First?
Ding, 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 ding. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Here's your argument. What the fuck's wrong with you guys? What do you mean? Nothing stands out on this record. The whole problem is almost every single track stands out for one reason or another.
Right.
Like we were talking before the show, this one's like stacked ranking. It's just rank your favorites, put them in order. There's really not a bad track on this record. And, yes. And I think that's probably why it's overrated or overlooked. And I think it's more like it's overlooked because it's kind of overshadowed by the ingenuity. And like you said, the first entrees into pop Van Halen with 1 and 2, right? And there's a lot of continuity there and a lot of natural extension, but this was so different. And it's so many pieces of different, right? It's kind of what we kind of got in the future was like all this disjointed kind of artistic stuff, right? As Eddie started to express himself more. And like, you go look at every damn track and you're like, holy crap, how could this not be in my top five Van Halen records when you look at the like individual tracks? Because, if you go look at our Chazalytics out there, some of these tracks are in the top five tracks, right? So I mean, you know, as a record, yeah, this thing is just, I mean, all stand out in my mind. There's like, you know, it's just that idea. We're just ranking the best here.
He had to plug his charts because, you know, Chaz and his charts. Yeah, but those are good charts. So
I'm
and, yeah. Yeah. And like you said, anyway, yeah, this one's highly ranked. So yeah, the individual rankings are going to get real, real interesting.
But so overlooked. Yeah, it's overlooked. Yeah, it's not on my list, but it's clearly deserves to be.
Well, does Brad agree with you? Brad, how do you feel?
I need to trademark something like Chazalytics, you know, Bradalicious, you know, we'll go.
There you go.
Nice. Nice.
Brad-o-matic.
Yeah. That's right. So this one, whichever one of you is tracking the Patreon and Twitter feed, I think like I had a, like this morning, I was listening to it on a long drive, the whole album again. I'm like, And when you look at it from a different, you know, over and over again and try to look at it as a whole, there's not a lot of, believe it or not, if you start listening, there's not a lot of variety. They do a lot of playing around with volume and tempo in a lot of the songs. They go slow, they go fast, going, you know, loud and soft throughout it. The harmonies are all there. There's just not a bad song in the bunch. And so I think I sent in like my votes like three times this morning as I was driving because I was really it's you know sort of like how thin can you slice this thing? just a great album all around, and so that's it.
Well, hopefully the last rendition of the list you sent was your official one because that's the one I sent Corey. So that's how
I'm
going to go down.
Yeah, that's it.
Corey's so, like, no more revisions, no more revisions. No more revisions.
And then who do I get late? I get Chaz late, but his ballot. So, but his ballot is burnt anyway because he bundled his number one song with Tora Tora for some reason. You got to rank Tora Tora separately. So we have a burnt ballot. There was a hanging Chad. We can't count it.
Ah, a hanging Chaz. Like you'll be left hanging with
a hanging
one.
Chaz.
That's all right. That's good. They'll be talking about it.
Way to go. You were too busy with the charts that you fucked up your ranking.
Fucking infamous. Yeah.
Embarrassing. But you know what's not embarrassing? Heath McCoy is not embarrassing. How you doing, Heath McCoy?
Hey, how you doing?
How do you feel about Women and Children First?
I love Women and Children First. This may be a little bit of a hot take here. I don't disguise my love of the Roth years. I'd put all the Roth stuff above the Sammy stuff. And I love Van Hagar too, but all the Roth stuff, including Different Kind of Truth is all tops for me. Mm. But out of the original six pack, I actually think Women and Children First would be my sixth ranking. I love it. I love the album. I don't think there's hardly any weak tracks on it, but something's got to bottom out a little bit. And that one sort of does. It's a weird album. It's a, Van Halen's such a tight band, and those six all through their entire career. But if you think of those six albums, they're actually a really tight band. And this one, it's almost like, and this is not a bad thing, it's almost like the train is going to go off the track some of the time. There's this wildness, there's a wild abandonment to it, I think. And some of the stuff almost seems jammy to me, like a song like Fools. It almost seems like a jam type, so like a jam band type of song, you know? So it's a little bit of a different album for that. And I think stylistically it is all over the place, and which is not a bad thing at all. But I love it. Despite what I just said, I love the album.
Hot takes indeed, a little bit of backtracking, but he's staying firm with his bottom six of the six pack. But look, honestly, if I really think about it, it came a lot closer than I'm comfortable sharing with making it to number six in my own six pack judging as of right now. But there's probably one or two that still fall behind, but I don't know. We've still got time to figure that one out. But until that time, we shall rank Women and Children First.
That's right. And for the rankings, we reached out to all of our lovely patrons, many of which are here, for their rankings, which they submitted. We also got some special guests. I'm just going to run through the list of special guests real quick. Yep. First off, we have Eric Sedich. He writes for the Van Halen News Desk. He does a great podcast called Booked on Rock. You can also catch him on every other weekend working at the Ejaculate and Evacuate, selling discount Canadian smokes and
beef jerky. So proud of my work there. Yeah.
Yep. So go check him out there. We also reached out to Chris L. from Pot of Thunder, who said in his rankings, Darren Paltrowitz, of course, from the DLR cast and the Paltrow cast. He's had a ton of great guests on there lately. Like, Darren's just been killing it. He submitted rankings. Author Steve Rosen, who wrote the book Tone Chaser, about his relationship with Eddie Van Halen, who's going to be on our show in October. Greg Renoff, I don't know if you guys ever heard about him. He wrote a little book called Van Halen Rising. He's probably the Van Halen expert out of everybody on the planet. Jeff Goebel, who I got to give Eric props for hooking me up with. He was able to send in some rankings. He writes for Van Halen News Desk as well.
Yeah.
And Darren's been contributing a lot, too, to VHND.
Oh, awesome.
Great. Really cool.
We also have the lovely Kelsey Van Halen, everybody's favorite. She submitted rankings. Greg Prado, maybe you could tell us a little bit about him, Eric. That was another Eric Fine. He writes for Guitar World magazine.
Oh, he writes for everything. I mean, Greg, you'll see his name everywhere. He's written a ton of great books, and he writes for wrote for All Music. You name it, he's everywhere. Greg's been on my show many times, and he covers all sorts. He wrote one of my favorite books, too, on Blind Melon and Shannon Hoon. Among many others, but Greg's a great guy.
Yeah, fantastic.
You got to have him on. He's a great guest.
We're working on it. Working on it. We only got 27 shows left, Eric. We're running out of
time. Yeah, there's only so many.
Hey, I want to give our best to Steve Roth, too, because I saw on Facebook he went in for some procedure in the hospital. So he's coming out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. All the best to our good friend. We also have Sean Geek and Fast Fret from the Sean Geek and Fast Fret podcast. They submitted rankings. Johnny Bean from the very popular YouTube channel. Yep. He probably has the most controversial rankings. I can't wait to dig into his a little bit more. And a late entry, Chris Gill, co-author of Eruption.
Chris.
He was able to submit some rankings. So really an all-star panel. Scott is asking for Steve Roney and Scott Davis, who wrote the book Pictures Alive. I reached out to them, but I didn't hear back. So no rankings from that, unfortunately. But I know, Scott, I believe you picked up a couple of copies of their book. It's really a great book, and we had a lot of fun having them on the show. But that's our who we got rankings from. There's over 30 people here. What we did is we asked everybody, rank your songs from 1 to 9. And some people, like Chaz, didn't get the memo, and they would bundle Tora Tora. And what I find is, like, nobody ever bundled Tora Tora with Loss of Control. They always bundled it with, like, other songs. I'm going to put it with End of Cradle of Rock. Okay, well, that doesn't lead into that one, but sure. All those ballots got burnt, or else if I had time, I reached out to them and say, hey, you know, fix your fucking rankings. It's not brain surgery. Come on.
It must but Chaz, be. It must be.
For Chaz, I didn't have an opportunity because I just got his today. So, but I do have his list here, so we can talk about it when we get to it. But we had everybody rank their songs 1 to 9. Your number one song got 9 points. Number 2, 8. Number 3, 7. And all the way down, your number 9 song got 1 point. I combined all the points, and we have our ultimate women and children ranking. So, Mark, if you're ready, without further ado, I can get going here with the song that finished at number 9.
Let's do it.
All right, so I'll just play a little bit of it, and then I'll bring the graphic in. Let's see if anybody can guess. This one, I think, is kind of obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Everybody's nodding.
I figured.
That's right. That's Tora Tora. Finished at number 9. It got 60 total points. Its highest ranking from people was 3rd. Its lowest ranking was 9th or last. 20 people out of 30 picked it to finish 9th. So its final totals are 20 times it was picked 9th, 3 times 8th, nobody picked it 7th, 4 people picked it 6th, 1 person picked it 5th, 1 person picked it 4th, 1 person picked it 3rd. So Tora Tora, the little instrumental that leads into Loss of Control, finishing 9th. I can't say I was surprised. Is anybody?
I'm surprised more that it got a vote for 3rd place. Like, that's pretty high.
I was going to say the same. That's something.
Like, somebody really likes that little interlude song, you know?
And you know who it was? Johnny Bean. I said Johnny's rankings would be the most interesting. He picked Tora Tora 3rd.
Wow.
He must have something about that track must really speak to his soul on a level that we're just not ready to accept, or we just can't possibly comprehend. That's the only explanation. Or either that, or maybe there's something else entirely. So, Johnny, if you're listening, get back to us with that. Not because we want to roast you. Like, I'm genuinely want to know why. Like, what was it that brought it up to your top three?
Maybe he had a little loss of control when he was touching the keyboards.
I mean, maybe.
But I got to ask Chaz, because he's on the call. You put Tora Tora number one and you bundled it with another song.
So, right, because, I just forgot. So I knew it was a lead-in. I just forgot.
You forgot which song?
Well, like I said, this is, and I love this record. I've got it too here, but it's actually on the jacket, on the back of the album. The tracks are not listed in the order that they appear on the record. So, in that regard, for me, this is, of course, the lead-in then to Loss of Control. They go together, as far as I'm concerned. Anytime you have those things, that's where I'm like with you guys. I'm like, come on, just... It's like, you know, the Zeppelin thing. There are certain songs that just, you know, one leads to the other, and it's the way it is. Just leave it that way.
Yeah, I think I bundled it.
That's just my vote. I'm a bias that way.
Even in the video they did for Loss of Control, that weird, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but that weird video
where
kids hospital.
He's a surgeon and stuff.
In scrubs.
Tora's part of that. That's part of the video. It's they lump them together there. Yeah.
So that's where it is for me. So it's at six.
Yeah. The other weird thing is you could have growth as an individual track. Growth could be just its own track.
Yeah. It could be. It's not listed as its own track, so we don't know.
No.
I actually prefer growth to Tora Tora. I think
I actually do too.
I wish they would have done an album with the original plan and had Fair Warning begin with, you know.
Yeah.
Growth, or it's supposed to be fully flushed out track.
Yeah.
For
growth. You can't really.
That was such a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's Tora Tora. Anybody have any thoughts on that one? That's pretty.
any extra thoughts on Tora Tora?
I think all six of the classic, you know, the original albums, they all had an instrumental, right? And I think it's got to be the weakest instrumental of the original six albums for sure.
I would think. Well, Scott McGrow hit it right on the head. Scott Haskin would have had it first. Probably, because he's a composer. He loves instrumentals. His favorite Aerosmith song is The Movie, the instrumental from Permanent Vacation.
Yes.
So I bet you he would have put Tora Tora number one.
Of course. Poor Scott Haskin. He's not even here to defend himself.
He'll show up. He'll appear in the ether somewhere.
He just did.
He's like an STD. He just pops up.
I'm going to say this, though. I think it's a really good intro to Loss of Control. It's very smooth. Probably. It's very seamless, where I think there's one or two where you hear a little bit of a staggering, like Intruder and Pretty Woman go really well together. And I feel like Loss of Control on its own, it's whatever. I mean, Tora Tora on its own, whatever, but it's really good with Loss of Control.
I think that, too. They go together perfectly. They complement one another. Loss of Control's Tora's reason for being.
Right.
I mean,
it's like one of those like suction cup fish that ride along with the whales. What are they called?
It's obvious some kind of self-indulgence for the brothers. I mean, as a track on its own, you know, it's fine. So it's obviously low hanging fruit, and I'm going to take that low hanging fruit. But you know, I mean, you know, nothing wrong with it. It's just there.
It's a little mini Mad Scientist Eddie moment, you know.
Sure. Backwards mass dive bomb. Yeah, that's a Eddie moment.
They wanted to put like the Sound of Wind to start it, and for whatever reason decided not to. Yeah. Act like it hurts is what Ed wanted to call it.
I don't know if that would have helped it or hurt it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, just for our rankings, I had it number nine. You had it number eight. So there was a track you liked a little bit less than Tora Tora.
There was, just a little.
Eric, were they in the studio longer on this one than?
Oh, no.
No.
This one was about 2 weeks at the same
time. It was two and a half weeks, 17 days.
Okay.
Like not a very long time. Yeah.
Wow. God. Okay, so not what I was thinking. Okay. Right.
Jeez.
Right, because this is like we're laid back. Just turn it on, let it roll. Oh yeah, check this out. Yeah, right. So
Ed had a lot of time on the road to write some stuff. So
yeah,
okay. He was only 17.
Not as improvised as it sounds.
Incredible.
That's insane.
Getting them out of the studio.
That's always their thing. It's really not as improvised as it all sounds. No. He spent hours, right? Even if it was just on the corner of his bed, right? Well, yeah. Eddie by himself. But
that's so Dave, right? I forgot the fucking words. And then
right.
I forgot the fucking
words. Yeah.
I forgot the fucking words. Yeah.
It really never gets old for me.
Somebody was talking
about it. Never gets old.
It never gets old. But somebody the other day who's, you know, not like big fan, they were like, you know, I'm not sure if that was like Dave just making that up or not, but I didn't want to ruin it for him, so I didn't say anything. I'm like, it was made up.
Like you've seen WWF, right? Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, that's number 9. Let's see what all of our panelists think Tora should have led into. Is it Loss of Control? Is it a different track? Let's find out. The track that finished in number 8. And it's Loss of Control. Really surprised by this one.
I'm really surprised.
Loss of Control, 106 total points. One person had it at number 1. Two people had it at number 9. So it finished 9th twice. It finished 8th 8 times. It finished 7th 8 times. Finished 6th 3 times. 5th 5 times. 4th 1 time. 3rd 1 time. 2nd 1 time. And 1st 1 time. So Loss of Control, number 8. I'm honestly kind of surprised it's that low. Anybody else?
Yeah. I'm shocked it's that low. I'm wondering if we have people who voted this number 9. Is it because it is the song that follows Tora Tora? Is that why? Just because the two belong together, you think? Or does this Van Halen swing style just not do it for you? I don't know. I'm curious to find out. So
I voted pretty low. I had Tora Tora at 9 and Lost Control at 8.
Okay.
I think it's I like it. It's just like a half-written song. It's frantic, and that's kind of its charm. I like that about it. I love what the brothers are doing. I think Dave is like, it sounds like he's struggling to keep up. You know, he was throwing whatever he could at it and he's sort of struggling to keep up. I think that the Lost Control chorus is sort of, it's, I can do without it. It's sort of grating. I don't hate it, but what the brothers are doing are amazing, but I've never, it's just, I gotta say, it's my least favorite song.
I tell you, the two people that ranked it 9th are Michael Griffith, who's a patron of ours, been on the show many times, and Johnny Bean again had Loss of Control number
Johnny
9.
Johnny Bean. He strikes again.
Not a fan, yeah. I'll just look here. Somebody had it first. Who the heck was that? Per Lineker had Loss of Control number 1. Yeah.
He feels Loss of Control is wunderbar, and hey, look, I don't blame him on that. I'm going to throw it over to Brad. Brad, how about you? Where did Loss of Control end up for you, and how you feel about it?
It actually was pretty high. I had it 4.
Okay.
I mean, just listening to it. It's shredding, right?
Yeah.
You know, Dave couldn't, you know, Dave's up there in the high pitch, but it's just something about it. That thing is just, it's like gasoline. And so, I'm surprised it's 8.
No. I am too. I'll just go ahead and I'll piggyback off of you, Brad. It was my number 5. And it kind of surprised me that it reached that high. But then, I don't know, I listened to it a couple of times and it just kind of rips really good for me. And maybe I'm just in that headspace in this given point. But I couldn't make it in my top 3. But it just felt like if I don't put it at least in my top 5, it wouldn't feel authentic to my whole journey with it. But I was shocked that's where it landed for me. But I get it. I'm right there with you. Chaz, how about you?
Well, now feeling vindicated and validated, I will say. This one came in at 6 for me on an album of 8 tracks, Corey, not 9. So anyway.
Wow.
I didn't set the track listing. I didn't make the track listing.
I'm kidding.
Blame
so,
owners.
This would be at 6 for me. So it right in the middle. For me, this track, I love it. I love it. So I put it kind of in the category with another one that's so frantic and kind of crazy that we had just listened to, One Foot Out the Door. You know, it's kind of in that space that I love Van Halen for just this reason, if for nothing else, to help me clear the room so we can, you know, do things less discreet with fewer witnesses. This is music that helps you do that. So, you know, it was always good fun. And actually, like, even when I was in high school before, like, Anthrax and a couple other bands, this was kind of precursor to moshing. When this song came on, we all kind of went a little nuts and we like just slamming each other and pushing each other around and shit. So, I nothing but good times with this track, like over bonfires in the woods in New Jersey with, you know, substances and liquids and girls and good times, you know.
If you're gonna lose your shit, it might as well be to Loss of Control. So
why not? Yeah, exactly. That's that it.
Throw it over to Scott Everett. How about you, man? How do you feel about this one?
I had it seventh. I feel like it's one of those songs that may have been better as an instrumental. It kind of reminds me of the Sammy era, like Source of Infection, where the lead singer is just desperately trying to hang on to keep up with Eddie and Al at the time and trying to throw lyrics on something that really they couldn't keep up with. So I like it, but I think it's just as a, and I'm by no means a songwriter or lyricist, but I would think it would be difficult to come up with something to match the pace at what they're playing at that point.
You're not wrong.
No, you're not. Now, Mark, before you go to somebody else, we just got Tom Ron Bruster in the chat. The Enchanter Tim is here. He had Loss of Control number three. Tom, just so you know, because you joined in a little bit late, it finished eighth. So maybe just type into the comments why you picked Loss of Control third while we go around the room and finish up with everybody's comments here.
Go, Tim. There you go. There's another high ranker. Ben, how about you, man? Where'd you put it?
Yeah, so it was the two songs are really, I've always thought, one song, and it's really almost an instrumental. Dave's keeping up, and you know, the fan I am of Dave, he's kind of not really relevant in this song as much. It's Eddie and Alex just going wild. And but like I said, the album is so solid front to back, this kind of being, I bundled them, and because they, to me, they were always the same kind of unit. So, but quality nonetheless.
Right on. Good stuff.
To me, this is kind of their musical sense of humor, honestly, for what you guys are saying. Yeah. Like, you know, who the hell could keep up with this? So let's just fuck around, because, man, that's just, people need to hear it, and let's just have a good time. To me, it just added to the whole aura and mystique of the band, because all the other tracks were so strong, you know?
Maybe that was the gag all along. It was just
it might have been, dude.
We're going to play as fast as we can, and whoever can keep up is like, all right, you're our boy. It's like they were testing Dave, like, he sometimes passes, sometimes he doesn't.
Well, I would love to hear the story of this song. Like, how was this one done? What the hell was going on? Be a fly on the wall for that session, man.
You may all be right. It may have just been like a jam sesh that just became kind of like bullshit, and then they, you know, attempted to make a song out of it. I don't know. Either way, the end result, at least for me, is pretty great. But Davey Lee Smith, how did you feel?
I had the seventh. Honestly, if, like I said, this album was tough for me to rank. So if you took my eighth through third right now, like, get back with me next week, I might change my rankings. Like, honestly, like, eight through three, like, I could have my eighth right here, my seventh right here, sixth barely over, fifth barely over. Like I said, this was tough for me. And I already knew with this song because of Guitar Hero Van Halen. Actually, some of the songs from this album from Guitar Hero Van Halen, I already knew. And I loved all of them. Spoiler alert. Notwithstanding, but I love the fast pace, the Brown sound in full effect. Any track that has the Eddie Van Halen Brown sound, I'm all in. And you know, Dave's radio chatter this year, Captain speaking, is always funny. You know, just the way they deliver it at full pace, and then at the end where they were like high pitched banshees along with Mike. I mean, just, you know, it doesn't get any better than that, honestly. But like I said, this one, even though it's on the lower half of my rankings of Women and Children First, for now, still kicks ass.
Yeah, I'm with Scott Monroe on that one. Just the howls. I mean, like, just speaking on a vocalist standpoint, the howls they're fun. They're fun to hear. They're fun to try and attempt and fail at them, but they're fun to listen to. So. Eric Sinich, though, where could you possibly, because you're known to just love everything Van Halen touches, like even the stuff that we feel isn't lovable, but you find a way. So how in the world are you gonna rank this particular album?
I had Lots of Control at 8, and the only because it's kind of like the Pleasure Dome, you know, of the Sammy era, where the music is fierce, and the opening is Hello Tony Iommi, right? It's Black Sabbath opening, but then the rest of the song is like punk. In fact, that's Eddie wrote it around the time he wrote Ain't Talk About Love, so it's a little poking fun at punk. But it's like if Eddie ever wrote an instrumental or recorded an instrumental album, this would be one. It'd be perfect. And it actually has one of the coolest guitar solo moments in all of Eddie's songs. What they do there, it goes, comes back, and it's like, wow. So I could listen to this song anytime, anywhere. I have it down lower only because it's one of those songs where, yeah, Dave is just trying to do something with it, but it's more really would be perfect for an instrumental album.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, I mean, hey, having Dave on it, no complaints here, but there are other songs that go to the top more because of the better lyrics that Dave delivers.
For sure. Yeah, definitely feel that. All valid points all around. So Corey, did you say where you put Lots of Control?
No, I had it at number 7. So I kind of agree with Davey and Eric there. Instrumental, I think, would have worked a little bit better. To me, it was kind of like surf rock, like Dickie Dale.
Yeah.
It almost kind of reminded me of Miz Relu from the Pulp Fiction soundtrack a little bit. Yeah. So it kind of gave me those vibes. Yeah, I check out on the chorus a little bit with the Loss of Control and all that. But musically, this thing's phenomenal. But on an album of, you know, really solid songs, and like Davey said, you know, check with me in a week. It might be number 3. Who knows? Like,
one just barely over the other.
To me, it's kind of like the Inside of the Dave era. You know, I know you guys weren't big fans of the song Inside. I love Inside, but it's same kind of vibe and feel, right? Just they're totally just fucking around. But the proficiency of that fucking around, I wish I could do that, right?
Just real quick.
I'm glad somebody else that liked Inside. I love Inside.
Love Inside.
It's always crap on Inside. I love the groove of that song. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, just to piggyback on you two real quick. Sammy wasn't a fan of it because he says, "Hey, what kind of crap is this?" That sums up that song.
Yeah, whatever.
I had a friend who said it sounded like Pink Floyd, an old college roommate, because he wasn't into Van Halen much, but he loved Pink Floyd. And I was like, "Yeah, I guess so."
I'm not into Pink Floyd, so that makes sense.
Not the one I would have gone to, but sure. Yeah. We'll go,
one of these days, I'm going to cut you into little pieces, right? Sounds like that.
I suppose so. So, well, there you go.
All right. What do you think? Should we go to song number 7?
Well, we gotta. I'm curious to know.
All right. Well, first of all, Loss of Control. When we did our poll, 85.6% what dreams are made of. So not the lowest album.
No.
Nope.
Still passable. People still were pretty keen on it. Yeah.
The lowest on the album is the next song in our rankings here. It is playing.
Very slowly. Yeah.
Anybody hear an acoustic guitar?
Yeah.
Put up the campfire. Yeah. Let's all get together. Gather around. Yeah.
That's right. Could this be magic? Finishing at number 7, Could This Be Magic? Total points, 107, just 1 point above Loss of Control. So if Chaz had to burn his ballot, that may have made the difference. Who knows? Its highest ranking was 2nd. One person ranked it 2nd. Its lowest ranking was 9th. 3 people ranked it 9th. 8 people ranked it 8th. 7 people ranked it 7th. 3 people ranked it 6th. 3 people ranked it 5th. 3 people ranked it 4th. 2 people ranked it 3rd. And 1 person ranked it 7th. So Could This Be Magic coming in at number 7. I kind of had this one pegged at number 8 when I was kind of predicting, and it did finish in that spot on a lot of ballots, but number 7 in the rankings. What do you guys think?
Well, let's see. I'm going to throw it over to Eric. I'll start with you, man. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I had I think I had this at 6. Yeah. This is actually this is a really interesting song. Actually, the sound of the rain I love, and it's actual rain. At the Sunset Sound Studios, it was raining out, so they just opened the doors and recorded. And it's one take. And Ted Templeman said, Eddie, just try something with a little bottleneck slide. And Eddie was like, I don't know if I could do it, but they tried it. And you're hearing Dave on guitar here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's him.
And Nicolette Larson on background book. Yeah.
A fellow Warner Brothers artist, and Ted Templeman was producing her. So in turn, Eddie's on one of her albums. Yeah, it's a really interesting song, and it's very cool. And this is like really more of what Dave would start doing in his own solo career.
Definitely a different sort of vibe than the rest of the album for sure. But sometimes Van Halen's really good about doing that. Scott, where did you have Could This Be Magic?
I had it at 8. Kind of a throwaway, fun Van Halen song. I kind of love the interplay between Ed and Dave during the lyrics and that sort of stuff. It sounds like they're having a lot of fun in the album, which I appreciate. But it's just one of those songs, like, they're having fun, but it's not my favorite song on the album.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's, yep, I kind of, I echo that sentiment, but we'll get there. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I had this at 7.2. I love the song, you know, Sail Away with Someone's Daughter. I mean, it's classic. Better save the women and children first, and it goes with the cover and, you know, the rescue with them on the front cover. It's unbelievable. It's just a great, you know, yeah, campfire song, you know, just jam. Love it. Blues.
Campfire jam. That's like perfect way to describe it. That's very accurate. Absolutely. Davey, how you feel about it?
This at 8. Like I said, and, you know, this is kind of an unfair pick to kind of compare with like the all the other songs on the album, because all the other songs are the rock songs. So it's kind of you know, I feel really bad to put this down at 8 because I love this as well. I love this a whole lot. I love that the fact that they don't take each other. They seem like they're having a lot of fun together, and they're not taking anything seriously. And it's just so much fun, and I laugh along with it. And it just seemed so natural with them, especially with some of the stuff like this they would do in the throughout the six pack. Like, I guess another good example, I know you guys haven't talked about this track yet, but Big Bad Bill is Sweet William Now from Diver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Down. You know, not a rock song, but it just, or hey, I guess Happy Trails too. It just all seems so natural with them, and they're not taking anything seriously. And it's just so fun with them. And I laugh with them whenever they do this kind of stuff. And the acoustic bottleneck is cool. And Dave playing acoustic rhythm, and you know, it's just country blues. It just fits in with Dave's style. And Dave can only sell this song so well. So this is in his wheelhouse for sure.
It's funny you mentioned Big Bad Bill. Scott Monroe in the chat also shouted out that one, and he called this in his words, "It's cute," he said, talking about that song and Can This Be Magic. So
damn's fighting words. Yeah, cute. Some, I'll give you cute.
The condescending cute.
I don't think like Eddie would have liked cute. I don't know.
Probably not. But look, yeah, even Jeff Brewer is jumping on that as well. Hilarious.
Yeah,
but
call Al Van Halen cute. I don't know.
Jazz, we're going to you. Do you echo the cute sentiment, or do you got
strong? Oh, this song is so cute. I love this song.
Where'd you put it?
I love Big Bad Bill. It was number, it would be 8 for me, or 9 in the context of me combining the two. So it's last, but I love this song for everything it is, everything that I echo, everything that Davey Lee said, man, absolutely. Nothing bad about this song at all. It's just in terms of my ranking favorites, it just had to come in somewhere. And yeah, I'm more of the, you know, brown sound crunchy Ed, but I love it for this, you know, the spirit of the band. it's here on full display. And that's why there's such a contrast between, you know, what we know and what we've come to know about the relationships, right? But what came across and what was really being put forward, man, I really was like, this was a band of brothers and they were having a blast. And I just wanted to be a part of that shit. And this is a part of that, like the culture of Van Halen to me, like coming across beyond the music.
You can definitely hear the fun. That's absolutely true. So I get you there. Brad, where did it fall in line for you?
Right at 7. Great harmonies, right? You know, but, you know, that's what this is. It's clever lyrics and great harmonies. Dave played a little guitar. But the harmonies were so good that, to me, I moved it up the list, right? But, yeah, I can see the Big Bad Bill connection as well. So. Yeah.
There you go. I'm just like, can't wait till we get to that one, because then now I'm just going to be listening for all the magic isms and all that. Heath McCoy, where did it fall for you?
For me, it was at number 6, and I'm a huge fan of this song. I love Van Halen's the Detours. I agree that with the Big Bad Bill thing and the Shooby Wop thing they did, and I'm the One and everything. I love those little detours Van Halen would take with Dave. I think they did them so well. And for me, I think of Van Halen in the Roth era, especially, as like a band of pirates almost. And this song speaks to that so perfectly. You know, this lonely ships upon the water, better save the women and children first. It's like a pirate, campfire pirate song, or a sea shanty or something. Or I love the country blues vibe of it. And I think it feels so genuine too. Like it was a lark, but I don't think it was a gimmick. Like, I think it's actually, this naturally comes out of Dave, and I just love it.
There you go. There you are. For me, I kind of echo what Chaz said, and Davey Lee, and this came in 9th place for me. Not because I think it's a bad song at all. Not because I, just like absolutely hate it, anything like that. It's just, ranking this album, as you all have said, was difficult. And that one just sort of, just for me, felt just a little bit out of place with the rest of the vibe and the flow of how Women and Children First go. And I know that's kind of odd to say when you really think about the tracks, and it's like, there's a flow. There's a flow, but there's not like a, it's only, again, what Chaz said, like, give me Crunchy Eddie, and I love me some acoustic stuff. And when Dave does acoustic blues well, he does it very, very well. That's his wheelhouse. So this fits for him. So though it's my number 9, not shitting all over it. So that it had to go somewhere.
Something had to give.
Yeah.
And I put it at number 8, and I think largely just because it's been stuck in my head for 2 weeks straight. Like, out of all the songs, I listen to this record front to back so many times. Out of spite, I put it at 8. Because all week I'm walking around the office, you better say the Women and Children.
Oh, yes. Pissing off everybody I work with. Yes.
Yeah, earworm, big time.
Classic.
Oh, you bastard. Oh.
I got a shout out, Sean McGinnity. He put this number 2. He was the one who ranked Could This Be Magic number 2. So
he must have, like, I'm assuming he's probably played it a whole bunch, or he just has like a connection with it in some like deeper level. So, again, I'm not going to shit on him for it, because it's a good track. It just, for all of us, it had to go somewhere, and it's just a little bit low.
This might be the most varied album in terms of rankings. You get all different kinds of stuff.
Right. Yep.
That's right.
This is an outlier track. I mean, that's for me why it's kind of removed. It's at the bottom because it's outlier. Yeah. It's an outlier. Yeah.
And for the fans who voted in the poll when we did this song, it was the lowest ranked song on Women and Children First, 81%, What Dreams Are Made Of. So still much better than pretty much any Sammy album we've done.
That's what I wanted 81%. To say. Thank you very much. There you go.
Unreal, man. Unreal.
What are those numbers going to come in at? 27 more tracks.
Jeez.
All right. Should we take a listen to what finished number 6?
Please.
Wow.
Well, we got some surprised faces on the call. Love that intro, though, man. Number 6, Fools. All right, total points 133. Somebody ranked it number one, and somebody ranked it number nine. So there's another one. It's somebody's favorite and somebody's least favorite on the record. One person ranked it ninth, three people eighth, five people seventh, 11 people had this as their number six. That was by far the most spots it finished on. Number five for three people. It was fourth for one person, third for three people, second for two people, and number one for one person. You talk about varied. We're all over the map on Fools.
All over the place. All right, well, full disclosure, I'm right there at number six. I was one of those. And again, that's great. Listen to that. That's just fantastic.
By the way, the person who ranked it number one, Steve Rosen, who actually knew Eddie Van Halen for 27 years, ranked this one number one on the record.
That's amazing. Well, kudos. And again, I'm not going to fight him on it. The thing is, and I'm sure you all can echo the sentiment, we'll probably talk about it ad nauseum, is just some of these tracks, it's like, where in the world do they go? I knew exactly what my last track was going to be, and that helped me inform what my eighth pick was going to be. But one through seven, for me, was really, really hard, because these are just like really, really good songs. Fools is a terrific song, and I wanted to kind of get it in my top five, but it just barely didn't make it. But again, it is a dirty rip, Scott.
Yeah.
It is not indicative of how like piss poor or really great the song is. I mean, because it's fantastic, but something had to give. It had to go somewhere. So I imagine you guys probably had like the same reaction there. Ben, how about you? Where do you think? Where did Fools fall for you?
Yeah, I had it at six as well. The lead in this is unbelievable. The Shades of Eruption, the Shades of Spanish Fly. It's a wild song. This could have gone higher. Kind of bit number six. Again, nothing so solid, but yeah, I was second.
I agree with Jeff in that should this be higher? Yeah, probably. And I actually thought I was going to take a lot of flack for having it at my number six. But I was like, well, hear me out. But I'm glad I wasn't alone in that venture. But how about Heath McCoy, though? Heath, where'd you have Fools? You're muted.
Oh, you're muted, Heath. You're muted, Heath. Heath, you're muted.
I'm sorry. I love the song Fools. I do think it's a little weird. Like I mentioned that some of Women, Children, Curse seems like a jam to me. And this is one of those songs. This is the song actually. It feels like a big long jam. But I love the heaviness of the riff. And I actually think there's a lyric in here that's just quintessential David Lee Roth. I just love it. I don't want no class reunion. The circus left. Just left town. Why behave in public if you're living on a playground? And that is such a cool lyric. That's there in a nutshell why David Lee Roth is such a great lyricist. Nobody ever would ever think of that. And it just comes out of left field and encapsulates the song, and love it.
Yeah, I agree. His lyrics come out of left field, that's for sure, sometimes. But where did you have it ranked?
I had it ranked at number seven.
Ah, so okay. So not far off there, around the same point. Scott Everett, you seem like a Fools man. Like, was this pretty high for you?
I had it right here at number six. Okay. And that's how good this album is, I think, in that there's no... The songs all are kind of muddled together because I like them all the same. There's no standouts. I hate to say there's no standouts, but I like all of them kind of the same. So, I mean, the bass beat and all that stuff is just fantastic, and Dave's lyrics are fantastic on the songs. That just, again, what a great album it is that this is sticks. And again, it makes you think about poor Dave's parents trying to keep him in line. I think that's where these lyrics are coming from. God help him. With his rambunctious little ass running around.
It's monkey time.
Couldn't imagine.
What they called him, right? Yeah.
Monkey time.
Made a career out of it.
Yeah. But Eric, how about you, man? Where's Fools for you?
I'm actually not happy with my original ranking. I had it at 7 and put the Speed Magic at 6, but I should switch those around. Because now listening to this, I'm reminding myself that was not the right call. Yeah, this is such a great tune. It's one of the early Club Day songs, and it's got that loose as a goose Alex playing on drums. Listen to Mike. On the solo, it's so cool because you hear Mikey on the bass too, thumping away. And yeah. Dave's vocals are, this is Dave at his best vocally, lyrically. This is classic Van Halen. I'm very mad at myself right now. I need to redo the ranking.
Very good. Right. Very good. Okay.
Well, it's kind of like what David Lee alluded to earlier, in that tomorrow you could have a completely different idea of where your rankings will go, and then next week something else. I mean, I feel that. I said that about Fair Warning. I said this is my list now, but I guarantee you next week it'll look completely different. So
yeah,
you know, no worries.
I kind of applauded the creativity I applaud the creativity of Could This Be Magic, but still, you just, you know, it's Van Halen's a rock and roll band.
Right.
It's a rock and roll song.
It's true. They do it very well, like no other. Speaking of Davey Lee, where'd you put Fools?
I was the lone fourth on this one. Like everybody said, I like the whole mini solo thing that Eddie just tears it up, and Dave doing his best Robert Plant, Janis Joplin, David Coverdale all in one tribute there at the start. I'm going to take from what my friend Lou Figuero from the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews podcast said, because recently they reviewed Women and Children First not too long ago, and he called it Dave doing his best tribute to Robert Janis Coverdale. So
I can't not hear it.
Yeah,
now.
That's probably probably the best way to put it. And then that mini solo, and then it just comes into a complete stomp fest. And you know, quintessential Van Halen tune. And Dave's lyrics, like Eric said, some of Dave's creative lyrics, he knows what he's writing towards. Angry young schoolboys. And
exactly.
He must have had and at the end, what he's doing is a little scat zab zabidoos at the end. He must have brought in Gene Simmons at the end. He's like,
you're right.
Thunder.
Oh, Gene.
You're a handsome and attractive man. Absolutely. Handsome. What
is this, Gene? Enough about me. Let's talk about
Gene Simmons.
Bobby's trying to take a writing credit, bro.
Brad, where did Fools fall for you, man?
I was at 5 on this one. It's like a dirty blues song. And I have to agree with what everybody said, although Eric, I'm annoyed with his rankings too, right? Eric, go back and fix it.
You know? I'm so mad at myself, Brad.
Yeah, exactly. Eric, right. Please. But it's like such a narrow band. When I said earlier, it's like, it's just thin slices of onion. They're all so close right in the middle of this that, you know, it's, and this one sounds like David is very upset with teachers. And then he gets a little bit older and he's in high school and he appreciates him later on 1984. Right.
Right.
But it's
just the class it was.
right. But it's just a fun song. Right. And that's the way I look at it. It's definitely got like almost like a smoky, honky tonk, blues feel, just jam. And
I can definitely, I'm a Nashville person, so I definitely hear what you're throwing down on the honky tonk feel of it for sure. It's sometimes I can't not hear it, and anyway, echoes in my brain, and it just until I just go crazy. But Chaz, did you put Fools any higher, or are you right there with us?
Sounds of Broadway echoing in my head. You can hear that stuff walking down any block, right? You know, and from door to door. So right? Yeah. So all right, this one, in deference to you guys, I ranked And the Cradle Will Rock number one, right? So for me, it would actually come in at number two. This would be my number one song on the album. So it's on my list at number two. My hanging Chaz is going to be infamous here. It's totally screwed up your rankings. Magic would have been like, you know, bottom of the list for me, like I said. But this one is definitely for me, just again, the whole spirit of Van Halen, everything I love about the band, the dirty rawness of it. Wasn't really comprehending that this was a club track, and I don't know why I had missed that. So the feel is there. This is for me just like the reason I picked up a guitar, man, was to make it sound like that, especially the intro, and then just the damp damp damp, just the stank, just nasty brownness of this tune. For me, this is the best of the Brown sound with the two of them, with, like you said, sloppy, really loose Al and honky tonkin grooving Eddie. That's it. That's the Brown sound.
Man, I tell you, with all this divisive sort of thinking and trouble with the rankings, when we get to Van Halen 1 or even 4 Unlawful, like, I'm going to have a bad time. I'm just going to have a real bad time ranking those songs, man. I'm not looking forward to those. I mean, I am, because it's going to be a fun show to talk about.
Wait, can we do a recall? Can we challenge the results here and do a recall? Yeah. Have everybody recast
all results are final.
Nope. Shit.
You heard him, you know.
Shutting that shit down right now.
Yeah, it's rigged. Yeah, it's stolen.
The Corey Morrissette podcast universe. You don't question it. You don't question Overlord.
Take it up with the judge.
This was stolen. Okay.
Take your MyPillow and take it up with the judge.
I'm going to take my pillow and go in the back room there. Yeah, with whiskey. Yes.
Where'd tools fall for you there, Corey?
One of Dave's greatest quotes. I was an honor suit. Yes, Your Honor. No, Your Honor.
It's Ty, Your Honor.
You got it.
I had Fools number 5. So it was, you know, right in the middle for me. I really dig Fools. Jeff Brewer had it at number 3, pretty high for him. That's actually about as close as Jeff and I think I've ever gotten on a song. So I'll take that. I was looking at who ranked it 9th, because we're all kind of positive on it. It was actually Nate from the Deep Purple podcast.
What?
Ranked Nate? Fools 9th.
No way.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, kind of surprised on that one. Yeah,
Nate, please reach out, explain yourself. I'm genuinely curious, but
this is no doubt the most varied ranking Van Halen album of them all, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Tom Armbruster had it at 8.
I guess he suffers no fools, that Tom. He's an enchanter.
He certainly doesn't. No, if I make a mistake, he's quick to point it out. So.
Especially with the way the bass stands out in this track. I'm surprised, Tim.
Yeah, the bass player in the group, you think, good call. Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
they're coming.
Dave said this was a heavy duty Broadway shuffle. Right. I thought that was a great way to describe it, right? Sounds like City Streets. Now, everyone's doing Louis Armstrong now. That's not Dave Grohl anymore.
Everyone turned into Louis Armstrong. Like, Dave doesn't sound like that. I'm sure he tried.
I see trees of green.
You saw him on Ellen. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Chaz did a great impression of David Lee Roth on the Ellen Show. My God, that shit-eating grin is just... What the fuck was that? He's wearing his suit and that... Oh,
that was embarrassing.
Strike that poor boy down.
When I met Dave in New York City, I got a picture with him. And I didn't look at the picture until I got home. And when I got home, and I got to show it to you guys. I got it somewhere here. And I look at the picture, and there's me, like, and there's him.
What year?
But I bet his teeth are
2003.
Perfect.
2003. What? One of the coolest nights ever, because he was drinking out a bottle of Jack, and then his bodyguard, who was his bodyguard at the time? Not Eddie Anderson. His bodyguard kept lighting up cigarette after cigarette, and he's bullshitting with Jack White, and he's talking about movies with Jack White, and he's doing all this. And my friend knew his sister, so that's how we got backstage to meet him at the Beacon Theater in New York City. And my friend's girlfriend comes walking up to him, and she puts her hand on the railing, and she says, "Dave, you know, my boyfriend knows your sister, you know," and she's just trying to be friendly with him. And
oh God,
he sees her and he locks her pinky on the railing, and he said, "Hey, baby, you ever see National Geographic? You ever see the pictures there? National Geographic." I remember hearing that. And she and her, she's like, you know, and she's like, she went back and she's like, "I think Dave just hit on me." And then my friend took his bottle of Jack, half empty bottle of Jack, while Dave wasn't looking, took it. And sure enough, they just refilled Dave, you know, Gave him another bottle of Jack.
That exchange sounds borderline either like super inappropriate or just very informative.
I know, you know, I'll never forget. Like walking down you go like this old school hallway and just, you know, cement walls and everything. And from miles away, I knew I can hear the laugh. You know, the Dave laugh. I was he's in there, man. He's in there, you know. And you walk in and there he is. And now everybody's going around. This one fan was like, Dave, you're the reason I got into music because of you. And Dave's like, all right. You know, and now he's kept it short and sweet. I was like, Dave,
like, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah. No, Dave was cool, though, to all the fans. He was not a prick. That's good. Was not arrogant. He was really cool. He was really
and now he's wandering
job,
around.
Man. He loves his
oh,
job.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yep. And now he's wandering around hotel rooms in Las Vegas waiting to hear his music coming from a room so he can bang on the door and say, hey, that's me. And young kids go, what are you talking about, Grandpa?
I heard you there playing Van Halen. I'm David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth. And I'm right across the hallway. You're like, cool, buddy.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to do a YouTube video of some karate moves.
The guy in the look in front of my hot tub with a midget.
Oh, my God.
The look on that guy's face. He's like, who are you?
Yeah, what the fuck is this? Do I have to call the police? But Mark, we've been invited on the DLR cast again. They want to talk about David Lee Ross' YouTube channel. And I think there's a lot of material there.
I don't. Are they sure that they want me on the show? Because I don't want
anybody.
I have nothing nice to say about any of that.
I think we would tune in to Mark. Yeah.
Mark, you mean you don't like Dave doing the jazz hands?
I got to tell you, I don't. I like none, like zero, nada of anything I've seen from that YouTube. Like, in
what?
Fact,
who
I
is that for?
With your gummies? I mean, you know, I mean, gummy company mitts.
I go out of my way to tell people, I dare you to check that YouTube channel out because it's fucking bonkers, and I just don't get it.
Tell me who the fuck that is for. Who is searching YouTube? Like, I wish I could see a grandpa with like a bag of cheeseburgers and what the fuck is
right.
he thinking?
I fucking love his stuff. I love his YouTube channel.
Attaboy, Jess.
Yeah, I love nuts. I love him.
I love Dave, but some of these videos
are so insane.
I was putting up a lot of those videos for a while there because he was talking about Van Halen and stuff, so there was something there to work with. And then as I got off way off track, like Jeff was talking to me. There was one of them I put up and Jeff's like, I don't know if you should have put that one up. You know, I was like, he's a little out there, you know.
I just don't know like who's around him or is anybody around him just to say that's not cool. You can't do that.
I think we've mentioned that. I think we talked about that. I don't think there's anybody like pulling the chain back going like, nah, maybe not that one, Dave. Like maybe think about that. Like,
Kevin Brown put it best when he said it's like the grandkids going to grandpa and saying, you don't need to be on TikTok, grandpa. Technology has passed you by. Give me the cell phone. You just, you know, watch TV or whatever. Put your slippers on.
They need to do social media.
Favorite Louis Armstrong album for you. Here you go.
I think they're all old, though. I think they're all old and he keeps hearing to empty the vault. He's getting confused about which vault we're talking about. His personal vault versus Eddie's 20 vault.
20 years ago. They're from 20 years ago.
Last record he did, right? David Lee Roth or something like that.
Wrong vault.
Diamond Dave. But most of these guys, you know, who's telling them no? You know,
that's what I'm saying. He's surrounded.
Nobody's going to dare tell him no.
No, he owns it all. He's just using his content.
Here we are, you know, like if I was with Dave right now and Dave's like, what'd you think of my YouTube channel? I love it, Dave.
Exactly.
Love it. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant.
Like, really, it's interesting stuff, Dave. Like,
you're a creative genius.
Very cerebral. People just don't get it. Like, it's so out. It's brilliant. You just don't get it. Yeah.
But and, you know, the cool Dave, like Alan from the Tapes Archive just put up a really great interview with Dave from '85, and that's like the fucking cool Dave, man. That's rock and roll Dave. You know. Yeah. And he will forever
back in the day,
Diamond Dave.
Yeah, back in the day, though, he was the lure. I mean, it was the entire band, but David was a showman. That guy,
the coolest motherfucker,
hardest guy in the world. Throwing the bass early on.
That's why, I would argue,
all four of them. It was unbelievable.
His stuff might be whacked out, Eric, but come on, man.
I still love him.
As much as I'm with you. Much as Van Halen.
I love Dave, man.
He has a sense of humor.
We are all still talking about him.
Love him.
That's right.
Right. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
You can't take that away from him. You can't take that
Chaz,
away.
Chaz, you wanted to take Mark to task because Mark said Sammy was the better musician.
Yeah.
Remember?
Then I got the context that he was talking about versus Dave. I think Dave has great musical sensibility. No, I don't think he's a bad musician, but no, to Mark's point, I think Sammy's more musically inclined, or if you were to look at the structure of his songs and the way he approaches the craft differently than Dave. But no, I would argue that Roth is a hell of a musician in his own right. And it goes beyond his voice. It is just his entire musical sensibility, his showmanship, everything he brings to it. No, man, I love breaking balls on David Lee Roth all day, but at the end of the day, he is the man for me. Yeah.
He definitely is a showman.
But I respect Sammy. I respect his song craft. I was a fan of the Red Rocker. I had the shorts in high school and the t-shirts, and I bought his clothing line, and I liked him before he joined Van Halen. So, no, I appreciate him, but I think they're just different. And to say that one's a better musician than the other, I would say one's more musically inclined, one more technical.
I'm with Mark
musical.
On this one completely.
It's like, I get what you're coming from, but I said what I said, and I'm sticking with it.
That's why I love you, man. You just stand right with it. That's cool. That's cool.
I'm with Mark 100% on this. You know, Dave's a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Dave's a great lyricist.
He's a musician.
Sammy's a musician.
I will say Dave is a, like you said, Chaz, I'll give you credit, a musician in his own right, and definitely
he's lyrical. Moves lyrically.
He definitely has a musical sensibility to him. You can't take that away, because if he didn't, then he would not be the showman that we know him for. He would definitely not have lasted very long in Van Halen, to even the extent that he did, but just on a musicality, strictly technical musicality level, I'm giving that one to Sammy all day. But
they're very similar, though. They both contributed to the songwriting. Ed comes in with the music, and then Dave, like Sammy, would say, let's shorten that up. Let's add a chorus here. Let's add a hook there. Let's do that twice. Then do the Brit. All that shit. Dave's doing. Dave, music is just one of the many talents of Dave. Dave's extremely creative, bright, so creative that he can't stay in one lane for too long. He's got to do different things every time. Otherwise, he will go nuts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Templeman was also beneficial to Dave as much as he was to Ed, because it's like, all right, guys, let's rein it in. Because then when you see them on their own, it's Van Halen 3, and it's, Your Filthy Little Mouth. It's like, whoa, it's like, okay, we're going way. Let's rein it back in. Mm-hmm. But to me, Dave is. I'll say Dave is fucking brilliant. I mean, he's mad,
Yeah.
But he's just so different than Sammy in that sense. He's just like colorful performer.
Well, but here's the thing, and from a Dave guy, so I'm all with you. But I'll say that, guess what, though? I would concede that Sammy was an influence on Dave, and Sammy is more the granddaddy of the genre we all know and love than Dave, because of his contribution to Montrose so fucking early and the songs that he wrote. Yeah. He was the blueprint, and I think even Chris Cornell would have been one to say, yep, Sammy Hagar, baby. Montrose.
I'm so glad you brought up the Montrose thing, because I was thinking that speaking of the R4 podcast again, I reviewed that Montrose album not too long ago on R4, and I mentioned that Van Halen back in the club days, they covered the song Make It Last. They did that in one of their bootlegs, so you could totally hear the influence from Montrose. And maybe Sammy was in the back of Eddie's mind because when they had that, because you could totally hear the influence, especially
influence on all of them is a point. Sammy was an influence on the whole genre beyond Van Halen. I mean, Sammy influenced a generation.
Cabo Wabo is Make It Last. It's influenced by Make It Last.
Totally it is. It's a remake of it, really. But there's certain things the brothers brought to the table, and there's certain things Dave brought to the table.
Yeah, totally.
Dave brought Montrose to the table. I don't think Sammy was an influence on him. I don't think.
No? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see that. Yeah, I
Sammy,
think...
we all trying to do all that showman stuff early on.
If you ask Dave, he will absolutely say no chance.
Never admit it. But come on, never admit it. Didn't Templeman want to put Sammy in the band before Dave? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, he considered it. Yeah.
Right? So they were all there at the same time. Yeah, I think there was more influence than anybody gives him credit for. Especially Dave.
Well, I got to put this train back on the tracks before we get more Sammy versus Dave. We're talking women and children podcast. First.
Yeah.
Yes, right. We're talking about song number 5. So let's start playing song number 5.
Oh, yeah.
12-string Rickenbacker. In a Simple Rhyme comes in at number 5. Total points, 137. It was ranked first by 2 people. It was ranked 9th by 2 people. It was ranked 8th by 4 people, 7th by 5 people, 6th by 4, 5th by 6, 4th by 3, 3rd by 2, and 2nd by 2 people. So again, all over the bloody map for In a Simple Rhyme.
All right. Yeah. Wow. I wouldn't have pictured this one. I knew this was going to be higher for probably most everybody except for me. I put this at my number 7. Not really. I mean, there's no real. Again, I had a really hard time ranking these songs from a certain point. This one, though, I was like, I think this one's probably going to fall to the wayside just because I think there are 6 better ones. But that doesn't mean the song is bad whatsoever. But I had a feeling it was probably going to be ranked a little bit higher. But I see a couple people have this as their number 1. So that's
right. Two of our patrons, actually, Michael Griffith and Matt Lacoste, had it at number 1.
Matt Lacoste, look at that.
That's right.
That's a shocker. I wouldn't have predicted that. I would have put it really high on his list, but not at number 1. Cool stuff. All right. Well, I'm going to throw it over to Brad. Where'd you put In a Simple Rhyme?
I had it at 3. It's just really balanced for me. It's a really balanced Van Halen song. All of the elements of Van Halen are there. And it's a little catchy. You got great guitars, you got great lyrics, you got great harmonies, Alex is shredding, so yeah.
Yeah, no argument there whatsoever. Chaz, how about you, man?
Actually, this came in at the bottom of the pile for me for the simple reason that I've always felt like the lyrics were being forced in there. Like they didn't finish this one. This one, like the music to me, like as a musician, I can understand where the song, the way, like there's not really a lot of pop sensibility in it for me. Like, so I heard somebody say that here. That's not in this for me. It felt like they had this musical idea that they really didn't want to, get rid of, because it's a great idea. There's some interesting things going on there, but it's not conventional. And where Dave went with the lyrics and the way they're being delivered to me, and I don't know, maybe it's the production, it just sounds thin. Like they could have had some more backing vocals at certain periods of time, and it just didn't feel as full or as rich as it could have been. So not that it's bad, again, it's just not, to me, this was like one of the rougher songs on the album, frankly.
I think you nailed it in terms of like why it fell so low on my list as well. Again, yeah, not that it's bad whatsoever. It's just, yeah, it does feel a little bit thin. Could be a production thing, or it could have just been like a structure thing. Who knows? But yeah, I think you're on to something there. Heath, how about yourself?
MVP in this song, Alex Van Halen. He's just, I love what he's doing on here. His, like that, the intro that he comes in with, and all his fills all the way through it. He's just driving the song. But I think it's a great song, actually. I think it's really poppy. I think it's one of the more underrated, underappreciated, kind of unknown tracks. One of the great, best deep tracks. I just love beautiful, there's such beautiful harmonies in it. And it's weird. A lot of critics, when they talk about it, I've heard a few critics kind of compare it to The Who. And I'm always, I love The Who. I'm always up and down on that. I'm like, The Who? I don't know if I can hear it. But I kind of do, because The Who,
you know, on Tommy and Who's Next and stuff, they used to do this kind of multi-suite sort of songs, you know, that go all over the place, different sections. And I can see that. I can see that Van Halen is such a different band than The Who, so maybe it's why it doesn't always click with people. I can't actually see the Who comparison in that song. And yeah.
The harmonies at the end. I'm right there with you. Right there at the end. I can feel that. Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed The Who at the moment, but the moment you said it, I heard it. And like, yeah. Oh, yep. Okay. And Tom screaming growth. Yeah. So. Davey Lee, how you doing? Where you find this one for you?
This was my sixth. Again, tough to rank these songs. You said Alex Van Halen. Yeah, he owns this song. I think he's the star of the song here because that beat is just absolutely, you know, typical Al. I mean, some of Al's best drumming, I think. Very underappreciated deep track. Eddie, again, shreds the harmonies, the dreamy kind of harmonized little, I guess, more or less breakdown section right before the solo, the dreamy section. And then growth. Really would have been cool if it would been a flushed out track or maybe start off Fair Warning or maybe just had, you know, flush out a bit more. But yeah, again, this was tough for me to rank this, but yeah, totally one of their underappreciated deep tracks, I think.
Indeed, indeed. Scott Everett, looking at you, man, where'd you put it?
I had it third. I overlooked this song for years. And then the 2015 tour started. We were all on the Van Halen news desk following the chat to kind of see what the set list was going to be on. And it was there. And it was like, what? They're playing that. And then everyone, that's where kind of growth picked up, where everyone found out what growth was. We were all researching what the hell growth was because they were playing it in 2015 as well. Saw him in Dallas in 2015, played it live in the dark of night, and it was awesome. Dave actually did a fantastic job singing this one in 2015, and that wasn't always something we could say in 2015 because he struggled throughout that tour.
This was one he could nail. Yeah,
he actually nailed it. I do love the lyrics. I think they kind of mixed up the music. It's a little bit different for Van Halen. I just love this song. I didn't always love this song, but ever since the 2015 tour, I've loved this song.
There you go. Since 2015. Ben, where did it fall for you?
Yeah, I had it at number five. You know, I love this song. It's really symphonic almost. I think it has a lot to do with Ted Templeton and Don Landy mixing and arranging this song. It's almost shades of Little Guitars a little bit with Eddie, but to me it's Michael with the harmonies and the bass. Alex is phenomenal. But the thing I love about this is at the end when they fade off of this album, that dun 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 dun, it's basically saying, now take that, motherfucker. You know, that's the way I look at that. You know, after you've listened to the whole album and then they just put that on the end, like, now there it is, you know? And it's amazing. The track's great. I love it.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I echo that. And Johnny Bean's joined the chat. You got some explaining to do, Johnny Bean, but before you do,
Johnny Eric, Bean had a fifth. Johnny Bean had a fifth.
He had a fifth. Okay.
He had a Eric? Fifth, and is that why he was late? He had a fifth before? Oh, sorry.
No. I had a fifth.
I had a two. I love it. Fucking okay. Song, man. My number one song, and this one might be like the two best Van Halen deep tracks of the Dave era. And I think this should have been a single, and I actually don't hear... what were they saying that they compared it to what band again?
The Who.
The Who. Yeah, I'm not hearing that, but I'm hearing Zeppelin, like Presence era Zeppelin.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, Eddie was going to do more of an acoustic opening, and then he changed it up because he didn't want it to sound like Zeppelin. Not that he wasn't a fan; he just wanted to separate themselves. But still, it's got that kind of epic journey to it, and the lyrics. Dave is perfect at that when those perfect harmonies come in. She made the mountains sing, birds against an icy sky. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Absolutely.
Dave, right there, baby. Yeah, this is such an awesome tune. And I'm glad they played it on the 2015 tour. And somebody had just mentioned, thank you, Wolfgang. He's the one who put it in the list. Mm-hmm. Yeah, number two.
There you go, number two. So, again, divisive, but there you have it.
I'm just inviting Johnny to the panel here. Hopefully,
oh yeah, right on,
Johnny.
Yeah,
call him out.
Yeah, let's get him on here because let's see. In a simple rhyme, add it number four. I really dig this tune. This goes all the way back to the Backyard Party days. It was on the Warner demo. It was called Just Simple Rhyme, I think, back in those days. I dig the hell out of this track. And you mentioned Alex is the unsung hero. Let's throw a shout out to Mikey, too. I'm reading Tone Chaser by Steve Rosen. And as far back as Van Halen 2, Eddie is bitching about Mike Anthony. I hate his tone. I hate everything he does. He doesn't contribute and all that. Mikey is great on this track. Like, I just want to throw him a bone and say, Mike Anthony, fantastic fucking bass player. Aside from the amazing harmonies, great bass player. He gets to showcase a little bit on here. He's not just playing eighth notes, right? He gets to do a little melodic thing there during the end. I love Mikey on this track. He's my unsung hero on
Innocent. And he's smoking a big fat spleef on the back of the fucking album.
Yeah.
That's right.
Love it. There you go. That's it. And you know, we end up saying that about every damn song. So I think we should just all acknowledge and all hail Mikey. He's awesome. He really is. He deserves much more respect than he gets.
And it should be noted that Eddie did say in interviews back in the day that Michael was the perfect bassist because he intentionally would step back. He could do more, but he would step back so Eddie can do more of what he does. So that way they're not fighting with each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it became his Achilles heel with Eddie right at the end. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately.
I think it was just publishing. Mm. Which happens with so many bands. How come this guy's getting publishing and he's never writing a song? I mean, in Mike's defense, it's like, you want me to write a song with you in the band?
Right. Totally.
You
right.
Want me to write a fucking song?
Right.
He was straight up. Right. He said
it's weird. Different bands work differently. Queen was the opposite. They got more together when they contributed, when they just put everything, every member of the band had an equal share in every single song. They did that from The Miracle on.
Through the creative process. That's right.
When they were fighting for publishing, you got Freddie Mercury writing Bohemian Rhapsody, and then Roger putting his shitty song about loving his car on the B side. He made just as much money as Freddie did on I'm in Love with My Car. Right. So when John Deacon, like they had three amazing songwriters and they had Roger Taylor. So Roger would just kind of glom on like a barnacle to whichever hit song he could as a B-side and make as much money. When they actually split the publishing four ways, they came together as a band. Van Halen was the opposite, right? They had everything four ways. And then three of them were like, well, why the fuck is Mikey getting a share?
Yeah.
And it became a bone of contention for them. So it's weird that with different bands, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life.
Wow. You have to mix that in post-production.
Our younger audience is going to be like, what the shit?
I was going to say, Mark. Yes. I love this current pop culture reference there.
That's right. Tootie and Blair. What's the deal with the Jeffersons? Remember the Jeffersons?
Yes.
Move on up to the east side.
That's right. Mark, where did you have In a Simple Rhyme?
I had this at 7. I mentioned earlier, it's not to say that this song is so bad it belongs low on the list. It was just this was one of the top 7 that was really difficult to rank, and it couldn't quite get there to the level of it couldn't get past Fools, and it definitely wasn't going to make my top 5. So it just by necessity had to be number 7.
Hey folks, Corey here, and we're about halfway through the Women and Children First rankings. We're going to cut it there for today, but join us next week and find out how we ranked the top 4 songs off of Women and Children First. And until then, as always, please check out all of our friends at the Deep Dive Podcasting Network, www.deepdivepodcastingnetwork.com. And of course, you can check out everything about our show at www.podcastwillrock.com. So until next time, on behalf of Mark Kammeyer, we are, and the podcast will rock, and we will rock you later.
Hold up.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.